This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guess who's back, everybody? Guess who makes his triumphant return to the airwaves of upstate South Carolina after his 17th and final week of vacation in the year of 2024? No, you had a little jabby jab in the knee, Lonzo. You didn't die. You're good.
No, that's me for 2025. I'm not going to die.
You were getting a little dark out of the gate.
I'm just going to bring it like that. You know, that's what, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great one hath returned. Lonzo back from his vacation. We would like to thank our boy Ben for coming in and his production efforts. We'd like to thank me for my stellar production efforts as well. But of course, the show is better when the great one is at the controls and he makes his return to us today. Welcome back, bud. How was your new year?
Yesterday it was amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
A little bit of something happened.
A little something.
Yeah. A little bit of a beat down happened. Squished duck happened yesterday. Pretty
good
excited about
God.
That. Yes.
Oregon. What in the absolute horse hockey was that? Ducks?
I don't think it was Oregon.
What the ducks?
I think it was having to deal with the
You guys
are
playing out of your damn minds right now.
It's because
out of your minds.
It's partially, I do believe, because of the onslaught and all the media attention over Ryan Day and,
stuff. Hold your dad-burned horses.
Yep, I do think it's part of that.
Hold your dad-burned horses. I'm not going to disagree that there's a lot of media attention on Ryan Day, but there's a lot of media attention on Ryan Day because a lot of Buckeye fans put it there. And when people like me went, it is absolute Class A certified grade A insanity to want this man gone, and then he does this? Like, yeah, we're going to talk about it.
I warned you of this storm a few years ago. I warned you that if the continuing losses to Michigan mount up, that
no, I agree. Yeah. But you understand? That's why the media storm was there, because the only people coming into this year going, there's a threat to Ryan Day, were his own fans. Nobody outside of Buckeye fans were saying that.
I got to tell you, and this is something familiar, but I think you're seeing what happens when Ohio State is disrespected.
Oh, God, here we go. You know, I was sitting here ready to give your team, I was ready to lavish compliments upon the horse chestnuts. And we're starting with that.
All right. So here's
for the record, again, the only people disrespecting Ryan Day were the Buckeye fans. Nobody outside of them were saying anything about this guy.
Stephen A. Smith, and there were some.
All right. Well, are you going to hold that against us?
There were some very loud voices saying he needed to be gone.
Yeah. So. Again, it's the only. Okay, then let me edit my take.
On teams, they watch those shows and things like that, and they hear that stuff. Even though it doesn't bother you or I, it probably bothers them.
Let me edit my take then. The only people who were criticizing Ryan Day, the only people who were talking about Ryan Day needs to lose his job, were Buckeye fans and the hottest take, hot take artist. Stephen A. Smith and a bunch of Buckeye fans who decided that insanely Beating Michigan was more important than winning Natties. Here's a dude that did not just get your team to the playoffs, but here is a team that took the consensus number one to the bleeping woodshed. Oh, and by the way, that's after taking the third best team in the SEC behind the bleeping woodshed. Your game was the only round one game that I said that's an upset in the making right there. And you had the biggest margin of victory in round one. Then he does this to the Oregon Ducks. This wasn't Tennessee again. This was the consensus number one team in America. He kicked the dog crap out of them. And the only people criticizing Ryan Day were a fringe group of Buckeye fans who have lost their ever-loving minds. Don't put that on us.
Also, I think it's funny how the narrative suddenly is they paid $20 million. You know, they weren't saying that for a while because the Buckeyes lost to Michigan. Suddenly they're winning and doing this, and it's about the money. Did you notice that?
I'm going to disagree.
I wish they paid $50 million. It doesn't mean you're right. It suddenly the narrative was there all day yesterday after, I mean, especially after they started winning.
I'm gonna disagree slightly and say that people were talking about the money when you guys lost to Michigan. It was just, LOL, you paid $20 million for that?
No, I think we can laugh about another team who paid a lot of money and didn't win a game. So here's the thing. You know, you can pay all that money. You still got to coach them. You still got to get them out there and get them ready to play. And all but one game, they had them out there and had them ready to play. And the Michigan loss wasn't a blowout. And they should have beat Oregon the first time. But Will Howard, good on your revenge tour. I hope all that stuff is still there. You hope you don't go, okay, we got him. We beat Oregon. Then you're done playing because Texas is waiting next week. A tired Texas.
Will Howard is 100% on his Hey America U tour right now. This was a do come. And for the record, I will say this. For all of the things that Zoe said, oh, the media, I'm going to hold myself accountable when accountability matters, which on this show is for all your takes. Going into this Oregon game, I have done exceptionally well in the second round as far as bets and prognostications. First round, I got wiped. But I want to talk about that a little bit because I will say this. I think the second round of the playoffs with the Texas-Arizona State game, with the Oregon-Ohio State, what a game that was.
That was.
That's the best game we've seen since Texas-USC, honestly. Like, it was spectacular.
I really enjoyed, you know, the Ohio State game, but that's because of fans.
For sure.
But, yeah.
I think round two saved the college football playoffs. I think we all looked after yesterday and went, oh, that's what it's supposed to feel like. But to kind of keep this where we're at for right now, this college football playoffs and what we saw, I'm going to hold myself accountable. Round one, I had two close games, one blowout, one upset. I predicted the upset of Tennessee over Ohio State. I got that one very wrong. I thought SMU and Indiana were both going to keep it very close. I thought Texas was going to blow the doors off of Clemson. I was 1-for-4 with the Clemson-Texas pick, 0-for-3 in the other three in terms of not just results, but even like being in the ballpark of one and ended up happening. So we go into round two, and again, accountability where accountability matters. I thought with the Oregon Ducks, I said a couple of times, even though I have been a staunch Ryan Day defender on this show, which is ludicrous to me, I have been a staunch Ryan Day defender on this show. I went into the Oregon game saying, if you are talking about two highly ranked teams that are playing well, I think the first question you have to ask, and it's fair to do so, is this who Ohio State is? The Ohio State that played Tennessee or the Ohio State that played Michigan? Which of those two teams is the real Ohio State? And I said, honestly, because those are both extremes, right? The loss to Michigan was the extreme worst we've seen the Buckeyes, and the beatdown of Tennessee was the extreme best we've seen the Buckeyes. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. And I think the Oregon Ducks, if we average out all of their performances and say, where is this team? I think on average, the Ducks look like a better team than the Buckeyes start to finish. That's not an insult. That's just how good Oregon has been. That's more of a compliment to Oregon than it is a disparagement of Ohio State. And so I said, I think this game is going to come down to two things. I think it's going to come down to the coaching. I think it's going to come down to the quarterbacking. And if you gave me my pick going into this game, if you gave me my pick of which combination head coach quarterback would I rather rock with for one win, Dan Lanning and Dylan Gabriel or Ryan Day and Will Howard, I would take Lanning and Gabriel. And I think, I could be wrong, if you take the fandom out of the equation, I think even most Buckeye fans would have said that. Up until yesterday, I think most Buckeyes, if I say, even if you love Ryan Day, you just said Ryan Day and Will Howard, if it came down to coaching quarterback and nothing else, wouldn't stack up to Dan Lanning and Dylan Gabriel. And then Will Howard's like, yo, I should have been in New York City. I should have been a Heisman finalist. Now, we all know in the regular season, that's not true. But playoff Will Howard? Change that man's number to 12 and put a blue hat and silver hat and blue jersey on him. Because all of a sudden, playoff Will Howard looks like Tom Dan Brady in his prime.
Wait. Why not put a red jersey and a 15 on him?
Because
some guy that most people haven't heard of before. Because why would you throw that guy?
Patrick Mahomes' skill is improvisation. Tom Brady stands in the pocket in the pocket. It picks you apart, and that's what Will Howard's doing right now. He's not having to improvise the damn thing. He's just surgical with the football for some reason.
You realize there are people out there who have never seen Tom Brady play.
Okay, people who haven't seen Tom Brady play are like 7 years old. Let's not get ridiculous. I'm not that old.
They're out there.
All right? They're like seven.
You're 1 month away, dude.
So all of that being said, this Buckeye team is unbelievable. By the way, as of right now, and I don't think this is going to change when we play the Sugar Bowl this afternoon. As of right now, the Ohio State Buckeyes justifiably have the shortest odds to win the national championship. They're plus 165 to win the Natty right now. And if you are someone who hits the road up to Asheville, North Carolina to drop some change on some sporting events, grab them now because I don't think that line's going anywhere. I'll tell you right now, the Ohio State team, and again, I am comfortable saying what we are seeing out of the Buckeyes right now is not a mirage. It's not an illusion. What we're seeing out of the Buckeyes right now is just who Ohio State is. And I, as good as that game was, and it was a spectacular game, Texas and Arizona State, I think right now that, I mean, they're that much better than Texas. I think Texas is getting bounced in the semis. I got to tell you, if you are someone who likes to put a little scratch down on some sports outcomes, Ohio State plus 165 to win the Natty is a good pick because I'll tell you right now, you're not afraid because of the narrative. Bet on narratives or don't, it's up to you. Because of the narrative, I'm not afraid of Penn State if I'm Ohio State. I'm not afraid without Carson Beck. I'm not afraid of Georgia. To me, Lonzo, there is one team left that scares me if I'm a Buckeye, and that's Notre Dame, and they still are not in the semifinals yet. They got to get by Georgia today.
Yeah, they got. I mean, and with all the tragedy that happened there, it's got to be hard to play a football game. But when they do, it's hard to bet against Georgia. It really is, even with a backup quarterback. At least to me, it is.
No, I don't disagree with you. In fact, we talked about this. I was hosting BetMGM Tonight last night with Sean Levine, and we got into this conversation. And I pointed out to Sean and Hayden S. Mario yesterday. By the way, my Hayden S. Mario are going to join us at 9 o'clock today. Schedule sets up today. We do have Lulu Kesson joining us at 8:40. We will talk, at 8 o'clock. We will talk a little bit about the Cheez-It Bowl because that got spicy there for just a second. We'll talk to Lulu Kesson about that. Rashad Beard moving to tomorrow. He's got a real job that he's got to do today. Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast will talk Week 18 Panther football with us tomorrow. We do have Hayden S. Mario at 9 o'clock to talk NFL and NBA storylines and Fight Club with the great one Lonzo coming up. First Fight Club of 2025 at 9:20. But I told Sean Levine and Mario yesterday, and you've heard this, you've heard me say this before if you've listened to the show for more than like 8 minutes. Rob Brown does not pick based on narratives of the past. Rob Brown does not pick based on narratives of the past. What a team did last year or what has historically been the narrative about a team, I try to disqualify those things from my reason for picking a team. The 2023 Notre Dame team has nothing to do with the 2024 team. There's one exception to that, which is, you know, a head coach getting experience in big time games. If you got a quarterback who's been in a natty before, then maybe the nerves aren't quite as high as a quarterback making his natty debut or whatever. Like, that's the exception to the rule. But I don't, as an overall team, look at a team and go, oh, well, they've been here before. The narrative about them is this, that, and the other, which that's kind of what we're looking at with this Georgia Notre Dame game that's coming up this afternoon. And we'll talk about that later in the show. I got a Georgia team that the narrative is they kick a bunch of ass in the playoffs. They won back-to-back natties. They were a couple of bad snaps away last year from going back to number three, but they got beat by Alabama in the SEC championship game, and that kind of threw a wrench into the system. So there's a lot of discussion about this, and I think it's important to talk about because the other side of the narrative is Notre Dame. Notre Dame has, during the Brian Kelly era, during the Charlie Weiss era, if you want to go back in time, how many times has Notre Dame had a regular season that had us all say, this is it, they've turned the corner, like Bob Seger said, turn the page. Oh, well, that's James Hetfield, but you get the point.
He just did the Metallica version. Yeah.
The point here is, how many times has Notre Dame in the regular season played good football and we go, that's it. This team's different. This team's got the eye of the tiger, the thrill of the fight. Like, this team's ready to roll. That's Survivor. They're ready to roll. And then they show up in the playoffs and they go up against Georgia or Alabama or a Big Ten team and they get the floor waxed with their backsides, right? The narrative is a Georgia team who keeps getting here and keeps getting it done versus a Notre Dame who tricksies us precious every single year into thinking, oh, this is the year that Notre Dame turns the corner, and then they get their asses handed to them by an SEC or a Big Ten team. Both teams in this Sugar Bowl tonight have a narrative about them. And by the way, Notre Dame's favored by a point. Excuse me, Georgia's favored by a point, but Notre Dame has been, I got them a couple of days ago, as a pick'em game. It's a pick 'em game. So it's not just two teams that are trying to carry their momentum of 2024, Georgia winning the SEC title game, Notre Dame going, 11-1 with the worst loss of any team in the playoff. But here's the thing, and Sean Levine pointed this out last night. Notre Dame lost that Northern Illinois game because they had one bad quarter of football. Granted, it came at the worst possible time against an FCS squad. They had one bad quarter of football. It cost them the worst loss, or there would have been two undefeated teams in this college football playoff. Since then, Notre Dame has kicked ass every quarter since that one bad quarter against Northern Illinois. And then there's Georgia. As Lonzo pointed out, no Carson Beck. They're going with a highly touted recruit, but a recruit at quarterback who has 51 career passes, and almost all of them came in garbage time situations against lesser opponents. Do you trust that, or do you lean on the narrative? And the answer to me is, Lonzo, I'm taking Notre Dame in the pick'em. I think that, again, maybe I'm going to come in here and look like a JA tomorrow, but I feel like this is the year Notre Dame kind of turns the page on that narrative. And without Carson Beck starting for Georgia, it's hard for me to imagine a world in which a Georgia team, which we all know is not as good as they were last year or the year before or the year before, is going to go out there and get a team that has been dominant since the worst loss of any playoff team.
Yeah, Notre Dame is Notre Dame. They do the same thing every year, every time they make it to the playoff. When's the last time they won a playoff game? I don't remember. I mean, I guess it happened. If they believe the narrative that it's a backup quarterback for Georgia, then Notre Dame's in trouble.
I will say this, and again, how many times have you heard me say this? Great one. I do not pick based on intangibles. I don't even like talking about intangibles because I can't. There's no way to measure them. Intangibles are nothing but speculation. So we can absolutely say, hey, if Notre Dame is looking at all this setup and they're looking at they're looking at Georgia and they're going, no Carson Beck. They're going with the backup quarterback. We're just going to pin the years back and go get him. And they take this cat lightly, and he turns out to be the guy that Georgia fans think he's going to turn into being. then yeah, I mean, like at that point, maybe they come out and Georgia goes up 14-0 early, and all of a sudden we got a weird ball game because Notre Dame's got to play from behind or whatever. Sure, but I can't really, I mean, I can't judge that. I'm not in Notre Dame's locker room. I'm not on their bus. I'm not in their hotel. I can't tell you that they feel that way or that they don't feel that way. What I can tell you right now, is that Lonzo's going to be obnoxious today. That's what I can tell you at 6:19 in the morning. All right, we're going to talk a lot of college football playoffs. We do have the 4 p.m. kickoff to the Sugar Bowl after the tragic events that took place New Year's Eve in my hometown of New Orleans, Louisiana. We'll address that and more when we come back. I am Rob Brown. The Great One Lonzo is back, baby. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate, y'all. Join us on our live stream, Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, or The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, YouTube, or, because we're just a couple of filthy millennials, Twitch. Go to The Rob Brown Show across all those platforms and join us on the live stream. We've got Mike and Danny and Madcraft that are all in here hanging out with us so far. The rest of you, welcome and encouraged to join us on the live stream as well. During the break, I asked the great one, Lonzo, of course, the chief advocate of the Ohio State University around these parts, why it was, as he played Hang On Sloopy as the bumper music on the way out, why is that song the song that Ohio State, you know, every university has like that song that they play, Florida plays Tom Petty and yada, 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 and there's always some connection to it. I asked why. Lonzo said, I looked it up once, and I don't remember the answer. So I went and looked it up. And the answer is, that song became a hit in 1965. And apparently, the band, the McCoys, are from Ohio. In 1985, Hang On Sloopy was officially designated as the state rock song of Ohio, cementing its association with the state and its flagship university. So basically, around 1985, Ohio said, Hang On Sloopy is the song that best represents us as a state, because reasons. And the band was like, okay, that's it. We're doing that forever. That's the reason.
I know you're not going to read the reasons, but as probably the only person from Ohio you know, doesn't that, I mean, describe me? So, and if everyone is like me there, then it's a good description of why they chose the song.
Here's the thing. I'm going to go right now. If I went out there, and I mean, you're not wrong, but if I went out there and asked like 89 people to give me a lyric to Hang On Sloopy outside of Hang On Sloopy, Sloopy, Hang On, I'm gonna bet none of them could. The song, obviously, about a kid from a rough and tumble neighborhood. Let's say they literally opens with Sloopy lives in a bad part of town. A very bad part of town.
I can relate to that. So yeah, I mean, yeah.
And then goes on to say, and I quote, "Sloopy, let your hair down, girl. Let it hang down on me." So you know, Lady Lonzo. It's like Lady Deadpool. But Lady Lonzo is Sloopy. I get it. So it's actually, but see, I got it wrong. I said a down on his luck guy. It's not. It's a down on his luck girl, because I don't know the lyrics either, other than Hang On Sloopy, Sloopy, Hang On, O-H-I-O, which are not in the official lyrics.
There's probably a good portion of people from Ohio don't have a clue why that's why that's the song. But just like if you go, why are they playing Inner Sandman? I guess because it's cool. Why are they playing Mr. Brightside? Because they're into voyeurism. There's a lot of things.
Coming out of my cave and I'll be doing just fine. Gotta be. List of rock bands from Ohio. Then we get to the Georgia Notre Dame game. Nine Inch Nails from Ohio. Devo is from Ohio. I'll be dadgummed.
Whip it good.
21 Pilots, Hawthorne Heights, The Breeders, The Black Keys, James Gang. Is credited as being from Ohio. The OJs, shockingly, the Ohio Players are from Ohio.
Just wait until you got to that.
The Isley Brothers are from Ohio. Walk the Moon is from Ohio. Reliant K, you should find a state song for Reliant K. That's who your state song should be by.
You like Reliant K.
I love Reliant K.
Okay.
Wild at Cherry is from Ohio.
Like that funky music, white
bam,
boy.
Bam, 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 bam. The ultimate wedding reception song, I think. All right. Mushroom Head, The Raspberries, the Pretenders. How are you not rolling with some Pretenders as a state
Chrissy
song?
Chrissy Hines, I Went Back to Ohio.
That's good stuff, man.
She was very upset about how Ohio changed. Probably don't want to use her.
That's fair. The Outsiders, No Not. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, the other ones, the band, the music. Let's see, is that, I mean, there's a lot more, yeah, but I don't know most of them.
There's a lot more.
There's a band from Ohio called Frickin' A. That's incredible.
I believe Information Society's from there, too.
I have not come across them, but it's a very long list.
Yes.
Very long list. So, my point is, you could do better than Hang On Sloopy. You could do better, is all I'm saying.
It still comes down to the best band playing that song a bunch, and then they ended up, because they were the only ones playing that song, they went with the song.
That's fair. That's fair. You also made, but you made that decision in the 1980s. That song was like 20 years old at that point. Like, you had a lot of options. Yeah, okay. Hilarious.
Should they play that funky music, white boy, as your theme?
Ohio.
No. I don't think that would go over well.
I think Whip It would be hilarious.
It would. But I wonder which is more known, Whip It or Sloopy. I don't know.
I mean, in the state of Ohio, Sloopy. And I guess that at the end of the day is all that matters, right? But I think outside the state of Ohio, Whip It, Devo's got to be it. They had the hats. It's the hats, man. The hats are iconic.
I still want one of those hats. Those hats are cool.
The lead singer of a band that travels around, an 80s cover band called the Molly Ringwalds. Have you heard of the Molly Ringwalds?
No, but I do know, I'm aware of who she is.
Molly Ringwald, of course, is the namesake of the band from the Brat Pack back in the day. The Molly Ringwalds are a phenomenal traveling 80s and 90s cover band. They're enormous down around
that
my
works.
Neck of the
Can
woods.
You, naming yourself after a person, do they have to get permission for you to use their name?
That's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. But they're phenomenal, and their lead singer guitarist, a guy by the name of Jack, grew up across the street from my lead singer and bassist, and he has dressed like Devo, for his whole life, dressing like Devo, khakis in a sweater. No, he's dressed like the guy from the lead singer of Devo. His whole shtick as his phenomenal traveling cover band.
I thought you were gonna say overalls and the smell of manure, but
wow,
you know that's just I mean.
Lonzo came back with the chamber loaded. All right, he's back, baby. So. Speaking of, and we got to get to this in a little bit, it has not been officially confirmed by Clemson yet, but the Post and Courier, including our friend John Blau, has reported that Wes Goodwin is out as the defensive coordinator of the Clemson Tigers. He is now the second of the hirings by Dabo Swinney as an in-house coordinator elevation to not work out is the initial offensive coordinator after the departure of Tony Elliott, and now the defensive coordinator after the transfer of moving of Brent Venables. That's what I'm calling coaching moves now, transfers. The transfer of Brent Venables out to Oklahoma, Wes Goodwin has apparently, according to the Post and Courier, been relieved of his duties. I expect that Clemson, if it is true, will likely confirm that at some point today. Look, here's the conversation, I think. I think the conversation here is going to be, this is a good milestone for the culture shift that I think is inevitably going to take place at Clemson, or at least probably should. Right?
It really depends on who they get to replace them.
Well, that's it. I mean, do they elevate from inside again since the departure of Elliott and Venables? Obviously, Dabo is now 0-for-2 at hiring coordinators from inside. There are some guys that have been long-term tenured that could take over that role. Some guys that have been with them since the 2011, 12, 13 seasons that are rumored to be candidates for that position. Or does Dabo decide to break from the norm of internal promotions and decide to hire from outside. Right now, the rumor going around is that he is eyeballing as his number one candidate Tennessee's defensive coordinator, which I got to tell you is a good one. Outside of the butt whooping that they received at the hands of Lonzo's Ohio State University Buckeyes, Tennessee had, and this is why I picked, this is the reason I picked Tennessee to upset Ohio State. Again, incorrectly, because accountability is important on this show, if no others. I said going into that game, there are two reasons I was picking Tennessee for the upset. Number one is Nico Iamaliava, which I can nail now, by the way. Thank you very much. I wait till the season's over, but I got it now. Nico Iamaliava is the most explosive quarterback that Ohio State will have played. And people said, wait a minute, what about Dylan Gabriel? I like Dylan Gabriel a lot, but Nico Iamaliava is a more athletic outside the pocket quarterback. Ohio State has now shut both of those guys down back-to-back weeks.
I got to say it. I've only seen both those guys play once. They didn't impress me either time.
No, you've seen Dylan Gabriel play twice.
All right. Yeah, you're right.
And he got you in game one. Let's relax a little bit.
No, he didn't. Will Howard screwed up. If he goes down and they take a timeout, they kick a field goal, they win that game. Come on.
Long field goal.
So? Field goal kickers are not very good right now, though.
Texas, what are you doing? I had the under 52 in that game. If he knocks that field goal through, I win good money. Nope. Can't have nice things. A lot of
doinks, you know, lately.
A lot of doinks. Yeah. What a doink. You big doink. Anyway, I'm so mad I forgot where I was now. Damn kickers. I've been defending kickers for years, and this is what I get for it. Anyway. The front seven of Tennessee was one of the best front sevens in the country. A little weak at the defensive backfield, but they could kind of afford to be because quarterbacks had less time in the pocket against Tennessee than all but like two other college football defenses this year. That was built by a man that is now being considered by Dabo to come in and take over the OC role if he decides not to promote from within. And my question mark is going to be this. Does Dabo stick with the Dabo philosophy and promote from within, or does he go get the best available candidate with experience and kind of break the mold? Well, he's gone into the transfer portal twice in the last couple of weeks. Are we going to see Dabo break from his philosophy or not?
He also got an offensive coordinator from outside the family.
He did.
So it's not unusual for him to do that.
I would say it's unusual. I would say it would not be the first time, and that's why it's going to be a discussion. All right, we'll talk more about that later on in the show. We'll get to this Georgia-Notre Dame game and more. That's all coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob, the great one, Lonzo, making his return. Spectacular to have you all with us this lovely Thursday as we get the first show of the year 2025 underway. I want to wish you all a very happy, prosperous, safe, and healthy new year. You have an opportunity as the calendar turns to 2025. I don't know about you. I'm a milestone guy. All right. Like I like to, if I'm going to make a change, if I'm going to do something, I like to have a date that I work up to that date and I go on this date, I'm doing this thing. And it's just the ability to tick a box for whatever reason is very satisfying to me. So I went through, I said, look, I'm going to enjoy the holidays. I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry. I'm going to have my good times. And then when Jan 1 rolls around, we're full tilt. We're taking it up a notch. We're hitting another gear in terms of my personal goals and ambitions, my show goal and ambition. It is it's an opportunity for me. It's a starting point. It's a green flag because I not just have to see results, but I want to be able to measure results. I'm a tangible, empirical guy. I want to be able to see results, but more importantly, measure them so that I can look and say, here's the numbers, here's the data that support that the change that you say is happening. I like to do it with numbers of listeners in the radio station, number of engagements and yada, yada, yada that we make. Those are the things I like to do and see as we move forward. And the same is true with my personal life. If I'm trying to lose weight, I want to be able to pop on the scale in the AM once I get up out of bed and look at the number and see that it's lower than it was yesterday. And you know, if Lonzo and I have a project, I want to be able to say, all right, we needed this much done and we got this. This is that opportunity. This is that milestone. So I hope you all take advantage of that and look ahead to what can be a good year. Because if 2024 taught me anything, Lonzo, it's that in 2 weeks we're going to be sitting here on New Year's Day going into 2026. The years are now 2 weeks long. That's just how they work. So take advantage of this opportunity, of this milestone, of this chance to really evaluate where you are and be able to look back in a month, in 6 months, in a year, and point back to Jan 2, 2025 and say, that's where I was and here's where I am and I took advantage of this opportunity, and I hope all of you do that. Now, with that being said, I also want to take just a moment as I completely throw the show back into first gear to tell my folks down there in what I consider the greatest city in the world, New Orleans, Louisiana, that I love you, that I am thinking about you. The horrific and cowardly attack that took place on New Year's Eve by an absolute monster of a person. It's awful, man. I woke up on New Year's Day. The wife and I had a lovely New Year's Eve. We both decided together that, you know, we weren't going to go out and go crazy on New Year's Eve. We had talked about getting dressed up and going out. By the time it rolled around, we were like, what do you say to pajama pants? We watch Ryan Seacrest on TV. We have a little champagne at midnight. We call it a day. And then we get up and have a good day on the first. And that's what we did. I woke up on Jan 1 thinking to myself, like, what a day we're about to have. Going to be a spectacular start to the year. And once I got up, took a shower, brushed my teeth, I pop on social media, and I find out about the attack that happened on Bourbon Street, a place that I have spent many a night, some of them that I remember in my youth. Horrific, tragic, terrifying, cowardly. There's a list, a litany of adjectives that I could use to describe that event, but there are a list of adjectives that I could use to describe the city of New Orleans, a city that if you go back a lot of years, back to when Katrina rolled through there, a city that it would make sense if it didn't exist anymore. It would make sense that the people in that city would have given up and would have said, nope, it's had a good run, but it's not worth it, and would have all moved to other parts of the country and taken all that, the culture that city is, and abandon it because it's been not great down there. But as much as there have been politicians that have tried to ruin it, as much as there have been some awful people from all different scenarios that have tried to make it a bad place to be, that city to me is the most culturally significant city in the United States of America. It is the most unique city in the United States of America. It is a place that nothing is real and yet everything is at the same time. It is my favorite place on earth. I'm going to tell you right now, warn you in advance that I'm going to be off for a couple of days in early March. Because the lady friend came to me a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, surprise, we're going to go spend your 40th birthday in New Orleans. She's never been there before. And I got to tell you, even with this, and she's nervous. She's like, I don't know about this anymore. I'm like, hey, no, we're going. It's the best city in the world. The food, the music, the culture. And on top of all of that, the people, man. The people are incredible, and they will show the world again just how incredible they are. Because And it's unfortunate how many times in my career I've had to make this point. But the concept of people when they do things like what this absolute monster did, may he rot in whatever the worst possible outcome of whatever's on the other side of this life is. When someone acts that way, they are trying to change you. They are trying to make you act differently. They are trying to get you to behave differently. And if there is one thing I can tell you about the people of New Orleans, Louisiana, it's that that ain't gonna happen. That ain't gonna happen. I go back to when Katrina went through that city. And that city was devastated. You all saw the images. You all saw the videos. You all saw the pictures. And one of my I don't know why, one of my core memories after Katrina rolled through there, what was a couple of weeks, whatever it was later, when football started up. And, you know, the Saints couldn't play in the Superdome. They had to play down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They had to play more road games. Like, it was just a rough time of it. There was a article that came out in the New Orleans Times-Picayune, the big newspaper down there in the Crescent City. And it was a feature on Saints fans trying to find their way in the post-Katrina New Orleans and trying to find some level of normalcy. And there was a picture on the front page of this paper that has stuck with me ever since, because I think it was maybe the most New Orleans thing I've ever seen. There was a picture of a family, and I don't remember exactly which neighborhood it was in and around New Orleans, but there was a picture of a family, great one, where they were sitting in, for lack of a better term, the guts of what was their home. It was just the frame, the foundation and the frame of the house. They had to rip everything down. The sheetrock was destroyed. All the wiring was destroyed. They had to rip everything out. They were literally sitting in what used to be their living room with nothing but the foundation and the wood of the house around them. And you know what they did? They rigged up a satellite and a generator to a TV. They rigged up a boil pot and a propane tank, and they threw a whole crawfish boil right there in what was the devastated remains. Nothing but the foundation and the wood frame. They threw a whole crawfish boil and watched the New Orleans Saints on a television hooked up to a generator and an old school rabbit ear antenna, because they said, we are not changing who we are on Saint Sundays. We're not changing it. We may not have a roof to do it under, but we're not changing who we are. And that is the ultimate tribute to what that city is. Bad things happen, and the people of New Orleans look at it and they go, how are we going to continue this party? How are we not going to let something this bad change the identity of who we are as people from the most unique cultural city in America? That was the ultimate illustration of that. A family in a house that doesn't exist anymore decided, we're throwing a crawfish boil. We got nothing left. We got FEMA trailers. We got blue tarps. We got no money. We got no house. We got no walls. We got no roof to do it under. But we're going to hook up the one working TV we can find in this city to a generator. We're going to stick some rabbit ears on it, and we're going to watch the Saints play, because that's what you do on Sundays in New Orleans, Louisiana. And they're going to bounce back from this too. Horrific, horrific scene down in New Orleans. Push the Sugar Bowl back to 4 o'clock today. And for the record, I think that's the right decision, right? I think that's the right call. It's a football game.
But also doing it during the daytime, just in case. I mean, it's visibility and all that kind of stuff.
I completely agree.
It makes more sense, yeah.
They initially reported that it was going to be pushed back with no knowledge of exactly what date it was going to be pushed back to. Then they came back and said 24 hours. Then they came back and said not quite 24 hours. We're going to push it back to 4 p.m., which allows them to do a full day sweep of the Superdome. It allows them to up the security. It also allows them to have daylight on the people coming into that arena to try to prevent another tragedy from happening. I think it's a good call. I have to commend the Sugar Bowl committee. I have to commend the folks down there that are in charge of this decision and the way that they are handling it so far. I think they're handling it exceptionally well. My heart breaks for that city, not just for the 15 people and counting who lost their lives, not just for the countless number of people who were injured by this absolute cowardly animal of a human being who committed this attack, but my heart breaks for the people in New Orleans who are now scared. And why wouldn't you be? Unfortunately, some of the video of the aftermath came across my phone screen last night, and it was a horror movie down there. People are scared, and they have a right to feel that way. And my heart breaks for those people who were just trying to go out and have a celebration on the most celebration-worthy night of any given year, and that's what they experienced. But I will tell all of you, as someone that is from that city, as someone that has a Fleur de Lis tattooed on his back that I am exceptionally proud of, as someone who, to this day, my home is Greenville, South Carolina. But if you ask me where I am from, if you ask me where I live, if you ask me where home is, it's Greenville, South Carolina. But if you ask me where I'm from, it is, was, and always will be New Orleans, Louisiana. I will tell you, as somebody from there, as somebody who the majority of my family lives there, that place is going to bounce back. That place is going to show you what New Orleans Strong means. And I promise you tonight, as much as it is going to start with a moment of silence, as much as there is going to be an air of darkness around the Sugar Bowl tonight, when it is go time, that city's going to put on a party for you. That city's going to put on a show around Georgia Notre Dame tonight. That city is going to show you. And by the way, Super Bowl's there in February. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, it is going to be one of the most entertaining Super Bowls. I don't know whether the game's going to be good or not. We'll find out when we find out who's going there. But I will tell you right now, the lead up to that game, the party around that game, the environment and the energy around that game is going to be absolutely through the roof, because that city is not going to do anything but have a good time. They are damn sure not going to let one cowardly son of a you-know-what take the party away from them. That is what that city does and what that city is all about. All right. Shout out and love to the 504 from one of your native sons, man. I love New Orleans. I miss New Orleans. I'll be down there in early March to celebrate the 40th birthday. I'm super excited about that. And my love goes down to all my people, all my Cajun folk down there in New Orleans, man. Tragedy. It's awful. It's disgusting. It's gross. It's horrifying. And yet, laissez les bon temps rouler. The people are not going to stop the party, because that's what that city is. The best party culture in America, baby. All right. My favorite thing about today is that the great one's back. And my favorite thing today about the great one being back is that I don't have to do the sports flashes anymore.
Yeah, I didn't miss this at all. 3 to 4 spots in the college football playoff semifinals have been claimed, and the winner of today's Sugar Bowl will decide the last. Texas escaped Arizona State in double overtime with 39-31 win on the back of 322 yards and 3 touchdown passes from Quinn Ewers, outdueling Cam Scattaboo's 143-yard, 2 touchdown rushing day, also puking on the sidelines. The Ohio State University destroyed the number one Oregon with a 41-21 win behind Will Howard's 319 yards, 3 touchdown day, including 187 and 2 touchdowns to Jeremiah Smith. Penn State is in after a 31-14 win over Boise State behind Catron Allen's 134 rushing yards. The Nittany Lions await the winner of today's Georgia versus Notre Dame matchup. Tune in this Saturday at 3:30 as Furman Paladins take on the UNC Greensboro Spartans. Furman versus UNC Greensboro, right here on The Fan, Upstate.